Gospel of Luke, please. Give me all the help you can, Ross. Let me tell you how I feel this morning. I feel good. Sound terrible and look terrible. But that has nothing to do with it. I feel like the basketball game's tied. Got 5 seconds left. And you're down underneath the goal for an easy layup, and your team throws you the ball, and you drop it. And Wednesday, there was no teaching here because they had no voice. And I haven't done well this morning, and I feel like I feel very guilty because you have every right to come and expect to be taught. But I'll give it the best I can with this stupid voice. Okay. Luke chapter 11. In Luke chapter 11, Jesus has just had lunch with a Pharisee. And we had that in verse 37 of chapter 11. When he had spoken, a Pharisee asked him to have lunch with him. And he went in and reclined at the table. So that is the setting. He's inside of a house. He's with a Pharisee and others. And he's having lunch with him. The lunch conversation was interesting. Six denunciations at lunch. As we said in going through this last time, when you come down to verse 42, but woe to you Pharisees, you pay tithe of mint and rue and every kind of garden herb, and yet disregard justice and the love of God, and so forth. And you think, well, this is not very pleasant lunch conversation for your dinner guest to say to you, you're a hypocrite, you perform, you're a fake, and you would think this probably didn't aid digestion at all. But nonetheless, the Lord goes through six denunciations in this section. And when we come to chapter 12 and verse 1, a large crowd has gathered. And the verse reads, under these circumstances, after so many thousands of the multitude had gathered together, they were stepping on one another. And that needs to be understood, obviously, in the context. They did not have microphones. And without amplification, everybody wanted to hear what Jesus was teaching, and they're stepping all over one another in the crowds. And in chapter 12, with this crowd gathered outside of the house where Jesus had been having lunch, they gathered together, and the distinction between in the house and chapter 12 is simply this. In 12, 1 through 52, 3, the Lord speaks about the Pharisees to the disciples. In chapter 11, he talked to the Pharisees. So, to the Pharisees, chapter 11, now to the disciples about the Pharisees, chapter 12. And during this long discourse, Jesus is interrupted two times. If you have a red letter edition, it really jumps off the page. The first one is in verse 13. Where someone in the crowd interrupts and they speak to Jesus. The second interruption is in verse 41, where Peter interrupts. So that then, interrupted two times in this discourse. The theme about which the whole discourse revolves is, number one, a warning about hypocrisy, 12, 1 through 3. Hypocrisy or performance religion. The second section is a command or commands about fear. Chapter 12, verse 4 through 12. Verse 4, Jesus says, I say to you, my friends, do not be afraid of those that kill the body. And an emphasis on who you should fear and who you should not fear. That is followed by the first interruption and Jesus' reply. First interruption and reply. Chapter 12, verse 13 through 21. Coming down to verse 22, the scene shifts, and it says, he said to his disciples, for this reason I say to you, do not be anxious for your life, and he gives a section of admonitions about trust. Admonitions about trust. And that is chapter 12, 22 through 34. This is the priceless section where the Lord talks about the sparrow, how the Lord cares for the sparrow and is aware of it, and how the Lord is aware of the hairs in our head. And you have probably the key section in all of Jesus' teaching about learning to trust and live life without tension. Following that, we have a parable about servants. And that parable about servants goes from 12:35 through 40. And essentially what he's going to say is this. A master goes away, leaves his servant in charge. And the servant says, well, we don't know when he's going to come back, so we're going to be ready every moment. And keeps his garments tucked in for service. The other servant says, well, he's away, he'll be gone for a while, and he plays games. And the teaching will be based on this. I am soon going to be leaving, he says. I will come back again. In the meantime, there's one criteria for a servant: faithfulness. That is then followed by second interruption. And reply. And when he's talked about faithful and unfaithful servants, Peter is in the audience, and the big question comes from him, as you might expect. As the Lord talks about those that will not be faithful to him, Peter says, who, me? And the Lord, in effect, will say, yes, you. And if you know Peter's personality from the New Testament, that's not unusual. Peter was the guy that the Lord said, you're going to forsake me. And Peter said, who, me? Not me. And the Lord says, yes, you. And here Peter is coming through his typical thing. As the Lord talks about being unfaithful servants, Peter says, you don't mean me, you mean him, don't you? Then that is followed by teaching on division. And that's the part where the Lord says, I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. A disciple division. And that's found in chapter 12. Something funny? Okay. When I look down? Okay. 12? 12? Oh. Okay, 12, 49 through 53. And then finally, notice with verse 54, we're still in this. This is a long discourse. In verse 54, the scene shifts, and he now talks to the multitudes. And notice how Luke has marked off for us very carefully. To whom are these words directed? Verse 54, he was saying to the multitudes. Verse 22, and he said to his disciples. And that's because Luke knows it's important. Who is the Lord talking to in these sections? And so we're ready to begin with section number one, warning about hypocrisy. We'll only put up a key word, hypocrisy. 12, 1 through 3. And the first thing we focus on is the crowd, verse 1. Now, if you let your eye go back from chapter 12, verse 1, just look across the page to chapter 11 and verse 14. And we need to get that to understand how the crowd felt at this point. In chapter 11, 14, they had come together and they were utterly amazed at the miracles he was performing. It says he was casting out a demon and it was dumb. And it came about, that's inability to speak. And it came about when the demon had gone out, the man, dumb man spoke, and the multitudes marveled. So that's the setting, that's the attitude for the crowd. When we come to chapter 12, verse 1, then, this crowd, after lunch, has gathered together, and they've gathered to see two things. They had gathered, number one, to see his miracles. And they had been astounded at what they saw. Number two, they had gathered to witness this confrontation between Jesus and the Pharisees. So two key words bring us into chapter 12 and verse 1. And the two key words are miracles and confrontation that the Lord sees in the context. When we come to 12:1, reading, under these circumstances, after so many thousands of the multitude gathered together, that they were stepping on one another, and he began saying to his disciples, first. So, primary audience, the disciples. The listening in audience was the crowds. So it's a focus on 12 in the presence of 1,000. And that's how we begin. The disciples are going to become the focal point, and the Lord will talk about Pharisees to disciples. And as the crowd has gathered, he gives the disciples a warning. The crowd, verse 1, the warning, now verse 2. Chapter 12, verse 2. Well, no, it continues verse 1, does it not? No, end of verse 1. He says, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. A couple of things. Number one, what does leaven mean? Beware of the leaven. This is the metaphor. And the idea of leaven has two thoughts with it. Number one, in the Bible, it is always evil. And the second idea that goes with it is it spreads. It's spreading nature. And we could go to many, many passages and see without exception that leaven is always evil. And second, it's always evil in its pervasive sense. It spreads to the whole thing. And therefore, he is saying there is a metaphor that you need to understand. There is leaven, which is evil, and it is of a pervasive, spreading nature. I like the way one person put it. Leaven in the Bible is contagious evil. Leaven is contagious evil. Now, what is among those that would purport to follow the Lord? What is he pointing at when he says, what is contagious evil? What evil is contagious? Well, the most contagious of all spiritual diseases. What is the most contagious of all spiritual disease? Hypocrisy. The word hypocrisy is interesting because it's a word that never really gets translated. The word for hypocrisy in Greek sounds a little bit different, but basically the word hypocrisy is hypokrites. It's a transliteration of a word, and it came off of the Greek drama and the Greek stage. In many of our productions, we tend to have elaborate staging and props. They didn't do that. If you see a symbol of Greek drama, what are you usually going to think of in terms of Greek drama, the way they acted? The mask, you know? And the idea would be you'd have a comic mask, you'd have a tragic mask, and therefore you could have one player who could run off stage and get the tragic mask and put it on, and he could go off stage, grab the comic mask and put it on, and therefore the word in Greek was used for play acting. And therefore, as he looks at the religious leaders of the day, he says, all you have ever seen is play acting. The Pharisees do nothing but put on masks. When they pray, it's not their prayer. It's from under a mask. And if it's, again, worship, they want to look worshipful. So for heaven's sakes, put on your worship mask and look worshipful. And if it's supposed to be a season of rejoicing, then for heaven's sakes, don't rejoice genuinely. Put on your rejoicing mask. Can anybody identify with this in terms of Christianity? You're in church. For heaven's sakes, put on your church mask. And that is leaven. It's dangerous. And the Lord condemns it in the fullest sense of the word all the way through. Now, you say, well, I understand how this can be done. Well, there's one other thing we need to add, and Jesus adds it next, about hypocrisy. And that is, we've got the crowd now, the warning about play acting, and now number three, the folly of all of it. And that comes to verse 2. Okay, you got ready with the mask now? You got one on? Or see someone or them with their on? How sober would this make you think? There is nothing masked that will not be revealed, and hidden that will not be known. Now that gives a little sobering effect to masking it, doesn't it? To putting on the worship face. Because if it is masked, it will come out. Now, you say, well, I've seen people live and die, and nobody knows the truth. Well, the folly simply is this. Hypocrisy is dishonest, obviously. And it is also stupid. And this verse, too, gives the reason why. Scripture teaches this. Truth eventually reveals itself. Truth eventually reveals itself. Now, that needs to be qualified. For some, in this life, for all in eternity. It does not mean that the folly of that hypocrisy will necessarily be revealed in a person's lifespan. But life is not just this life. There is eternity to reckon with. And therefore the principle stands, truth always reveals itself, either in time, that is this life, or in eternity, but it always reveals itself. That's the folly. Now, verse 3, Jesus makes the application. The application is made in verse 3. And notice, with the third verse, he simply reinforces. He says, accordingly, whatever you have said in the dark shall be heard in the light, and what you have whispered in the inner rooms shall be proclaimed from the housetops. The idea, truth always reveals itself, and that is the warning now about hypocrisy. The second thing we come to is a series of commands about fear. 12:4 through 12. And first of all, he's going to relate it to personalities, who we should and who we should not fear. 12:4 and 5. And then second, he will relate it to his own protection of us. First, who we should not fear. And notice in verse 4, He's been talking about hypocrites. And notice the shift. And I say to you, my friends. So the shift is away from the Pharisees onto the disciples who are his friends. Do not be afraid of those who kill the body. And after that, have no more than they can do. But, on the other hand, I will warn you whom to fear. Fear the one who, after he is killed, has authority to cast into hell. Now, let's do a little work with this because we want to put down, and this will be our closing point, the word hell. The word hell is the Greek word Gehenna, G-E-H-E-N-N-A. And let me give you several points with regard to hell. First of all, it's a word that comes from Hebrew, ge, second word, hinnom. Comes from the old, this comes, the idea of hell comes right out of the Old Testament. Gehinnom, ge Hebrew for land, and it means, very simply, land of Hinnom. In other words, Gehenna, here translated in the English with the word hell, is geography. It's the land of Hinnom. Now let's go to the land of Hinnom. If you've got a Bible with a map of Jerusalem in the back, I think even halfway good maps of Jerusalem should show you this. If you can find a map of Jerusalem. Probably should have made an overhead out of this, but we're going to look at the land of Hinnom, called Gehenna in Greek, translated in our Bibles with the word hell. Okay, if you how many got a map of Jerusalem? You got something to show you? Do you have the walls outlined? Mine has got the kind of the walls outlined. Can you look down to the south? Do you see the Hinnom Valley? Okay, notice it starts down right about the pinnacle of the temple in the at the Pool of Siloam. And notice it sweeps from the southeast corner of the city, and it sweeps on up into the west. You got it? It's a land, it's a valley. This is the Valley of Hinnom. In that particular valley, in the Old Testament, was established a high place or a place of worship of pagan gods. So it was a worship place, became a worship place called Tophet. Worship place called Tophet or Tophet, T-O-P-H-E-T. And in that place, there was, in that valley, there was a hole. And in that hole was placed wood that was ignited. Wood that was ignited. And so, not knowing exactly where, but if you look to the south, somewhere in that valley would be a hole filled with wood continually, and it would be ignited in worship. Go back to Isaiah chapter 30. Isaiah 30. And way back as far as Isaiah, he focused on this valley and the pagan worship that took place there. And therefore we read in chapter 30 and verse 33. For Topheth, and if you have a New American Standard, do you have a one by Topheth taking you out to your margin? It says, the place of human sacrifice to Moloch. So for Topheth, the place of human sacrifice to the pagan god Moloch, Topheth has long been ready. Indeed, it has been prepared for the king. He has made it deep and large, a pyre of fire with plenty of wood. the breath of the Lord, like a torrent of brimstone, sets it afire. And he's announcing judgment on the king. And he relates it to the valley of Hinnom in Israel. The pitiful thing is this. At least two of the kings of Judah, Ahaz and King Manasseh in Judah, sacrificed their children at this place. And while I'm writing, you might go to 2 Chronicles 28. It's one of the most horrible periods in the history of Israel in the Old Testament, when her own kings got involved in this worship. And we can read about it in 2 Chronicles chapter 28. 1 through 3. Ahaz was 20 years old when he became king. That's king of Judah. And he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem and did not do right in the sight of the Lord as David his father had done. But he walked in the ways of the kings of Israel. He also made molten images for Baals. Moreover, his attention is attracted toward the pagan worship in the south part just outside of the walls of Jerusalem. It says, moreover, he burned incense in the valley of Ben-Hinnom and burned his sons in the fire, according to the abominations of the nations whom the Lord had driven out from before the sons of Israel. And he sacrificed and burned incense on the high places, on the hills, and under every green tree. Therefore, bring in some of, and we could go also to Jeremiah that records this same incident. Therefore, fifth, when you approached Hinnom geographically, you could always see the flames. The flames of Gehenna burned continually. Now, when Jesus comes along and he begins to talk about the eternal abode of the unbeliever, he picks up Hinnom as the illustration. Hinnom is the symbol used for Jesus, by Jesus, for eternal destruction. And therefore, anyone living in Jerusalem, you went out to take a walk on the south wall, you could remind your children as they saw the flames leaping up, you could remind them. And this, by the way, was where the city of Jerusalem dumped all of their refuse. All the refuse was dumped in Hinnom, and literally the waste system in Jerusalem kept Hinnom burning. And therefore, as Jesus teaches, he utilizes this valley as an illustration of hell. And therefore, in chapter 11 or 12, he's going to say, who should you really fear? You should really fear the one that has the power of life and death. And we will find in our next study that that will be the Lord himself. And we'll move in that direction. Now, tonight, I don't know what to do. I knew you were going to say that. Do you want to give me a nervous breakdown? Make me go home and go to bed? No way. Come upon. Well, I think it's probably best judgment, though, because it doesn't improve toward nighttime. That let's scratch tonight. I'll tell you what, we'll have tonight. And most likely I'll be in good enough shape to go. Because I've got a whole bunch of stuff here. It's really good. Pardon me if I say so in this chapter. And I want to do it. So, okay, let's do it this way. We will meet tonight. And I'll do what I can. If it's like now, I sound fine.